In this episode, I'm in conversation with Belinda Dewar. Welcome to another episode and the last episode in this second batch of conversations that I've had this year. Thank you again for listening. There must be now about 20 episodes available for you to listen to and to share, and please do word of mouth, and sharing the links to these episodes is a great help. And you know, the whole idea behind this podcast is it's a bit of a learning resource. It's to kind of get you some ideas, some inspiration, get you into that kind of curious mindset of different things that you can learn from a host of different people. And today will be no different. I'm having a conversation with Belinda Dewar. Belinda is the chief executive of or director rather of We Culture, which is a company that aims to kind of support people to explore and enhance their culture through the use of appreciative inquiry. And that's what Belinda and I discuss today, appreciative inquiry as an approach to kind of look at the things that work well within our system, and to use that as the basis of our curiosity and our learning and development, and kind of, you know, building on that for improvement. And Belinda gives some fantastic examples of that, again based on some of the principles that we all know as kind of QI practitioners about, you know, starting small and kind of being curious and watching the ripples go into the lake, as it were, and it becomes much bigger. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Belinda. Welcome back to the podcast, and I'm delighted to be joined by Belinda Dewar. Belinda, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. Really pleased to be here.
Yeah, delighted to have you on. I was really glad when you reached out. We're going to talk about a subject that is something that's kind of percolating in my brain at the minute in terms of how I kind of take it forward. So it'll be good to have this conversation for my own learning, as I'm sure it will be for others. But before we kind of jump into that, Belinda, I wondered if you wanted to tell us maybe a bit about yourself, a bit about the day job, and kind of how you've come to where you are.
Yeah, sure. Well, I suppose I've been a nurse, or I'm a nurse researcher, academic, and have had, you know, various roles in all of these things over the past 40 years. So I'm quite old, really. Yeah, so working in universities, working in practice, all over the place, really. And I guess maybe if I look back over all of these different jobs I've had in different settings, I guess I've always been really interested, I suppose, puzzled and excited by learning and practice. Mm-hmm. Kind of maybe always used to get a bit frustrated about theory and how it really relates to the everyday world and can touch everyone. So that's always been perhaps a bit of a fascination and puzzlement for me. And just that whole thing about getting really sort of uncovering practices and experiences that are kind of known but rarely said. Mm. It's also been a kind of thread that's gone through all of the different positions that I've had. And really it kind of finally came to fruition in terms of appreciative inquiry. How I really got into that was I had been very familiar and did a lot of action research, which many of you will know is sort of a participatory approach to research, sort of doing research with people, not on them. So I did a lot of that and then took up a new position as a lead nurse for compassionate care in an organisation here in Scotland. it was a big project, and it was really on the back of the project was really instigated on the back of the Francis inquiry. So compassion was really, you know, a hot topic at that time. And I just kind of realized, gosh, it was going to be really hard to go in and work with people and look for problems with compassion. Compassion is such an emotive thing that if you're said that you're not compassionate, I mean, it's pretty difficult to get over that and move on. So really it came to like then about, gosh, I wonder about appreciative inquiry, which of course is participatory, but it is looking with a different gaze on something, i.e. really trying to find out what's working well and why, etc. And I'll say a bit more about that later. But
sure.
That was my first kind of introduction to it back in 2008. And it was really, I suppose, transformational, and it's gone on from there. And my current kind of day-to-day thing, Jonathan, is I'm freelance. I'm a freelance consultant now, but I have a visiting professor role at Robert Gordon University. But the day-to-day work really is working with people across health and social care to use appreciative inquiry to really bring about development. Often I don't use the words change or improvement. That seems to, for people, imply that maybe they're not doing things right or something. So this idea of really developing that either across a whole system or with small groups of people, often working with people over a long period of time, and other times just working with people for a day. So lots of different kinds of work in different settings, be it care homes, be it the Australian government, be it a whole hospital. So a range of places. So that's kind of what I do day to day, and how I came to to be doing it.
Wow, seems like a really varied and interesting career, and it sounds like what you're doing just now is really varied. Interesting little observation there around how you describe change and improvement. That I think that's a fair comment, actually. I've certainly had experiences leading change and improvement where people kind of take the perception that you're suggesting what they're doing is not good enough, or what they're doing is wrong, and that you're there to, you know, try and fix, and that does get the hackles up. So yeah, I suppose that's maybe where appreciative inquiry comes in, because that maybe starts to help you to frame things differently. So that's what we're going to discuss. You've mentioned it already in terms of a kind of a method for, as you'd say, development. But I just wondered if you could give us a bit of a rundown of what exactly is appreciative inquiry, or AI, as it's often referred to as well, which is confusing because we also have AI, artificial intelligence.
I know.
But as well as describing what it is, Belinda, I'm really keen for you to actually cover what it's not and do a bit of myth busting, because for me, I don't know that I'm 100% sure on what appreciative inquiry is, and we'll cover how you can do appreciative inquiry and what that process may be like. But I'm not always quite sure if, you know, where to start, what exactly is, or as the case may be, what it's not.
Yeah, and it's an interesting question, because probably if people read about appreciative inquiry, they, you know, obviously go to the important work of David Cooper Ryder, who developed this way back in the 60s. There's a lot of writers writing about it now. And a lot of the time when they're writing about appreciative inquiry, they talk about, it's about looking at what's working well, mm-hmm. and really trying to understand why that's working well. And indeed, the responses to that can give you a good indication and key to the things that are not working well. And it kind of builds on that whole safety one, safety two idea, whereby, you know, we can spend a lot of time focusing on problems and what's not working well. But for the 97% of things that do go well in organizations, we don't have the same gaze of thinking about, gosh, what actually worked well there and why. You know, you think about, I know when practitioners get an audit report in or a inspectorate report in, if it had been like from the Care Commission, and their eyes are immediately drawn to the things that are not working well and how we can fix them.
Yeah.
So it's a real flip to that. So I think in its simplest term, when people are reading about it, people think it's about what's working well and why. And there's a number of things, so it is that, but there's a number of things to say about that. And that is that what's working well, people sometimes find it hard to articulate. We're not used to being asked it. We're used to being asked what's the problems. So it's actually a little bit countercultural to be really looking at what's working well and why. But I wanted to add that in the work that we do is also around that, as well as what really being curious about what we value and what matters to us. Because a lot of people think, well, this positivity is a little bit fake because there's lots of problems. The systems are really stretched, particularly at the moment. You know, you think all that's happened over the years. And so how can we be going and looking at, you know, what's working well? It's Pollyannish, it's a bit fake, fluffy, you know, that's how it's kind of described. But if we also add in there that's about what people care about, or value, and what matters, then even if something's not happening, it is expressed in a different way. So you're not expressing the problem is that, you know, people keep falling in this place and the staff are this and the staff are that. You're not expressing in that way. What you're saying is what I would really value is support to get this right. I'd really value if there was, like, you're saying it out in a different way. So it's a reframing, which can bring energy and impetus to try to do something about it and not have that kind of defensive attitude.
And that seems to be an easy space for us to kind of fill, as to most of us could talk about what's went wrong and why it's went wrong. And I know that when we had a conversation before, when you kind of start from that space, the recommendations or the actions you tend to come up from that always kind of tend to look the same. You know, improve communication, better team working, you know, better implementation or application of the policy or the protocol. And it's not always necessarily what's needed, because you don't necessarily have that appreciation of, you know, the everyday work and the what's actually, you know, what's actually happening within your system. So, I mean, that's much clearer to me. And it kind of, you know, it kind of does kind of demythologize some of it in terms of that fluffiness and that positivity. And some people do certainly see it that way. So if you were, you know, if you had a team of people, if you had a group and you were facilitating a session, like how would you lead an appreciative inquiry exercise or session with people, whether you want to talk about that, maybe framed around a particular learning experience or a particular aim or objective? Like, what could that process look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe just to say a little bit more, Jonathan, about what it is, in order to look at what one might do about it. I think central, sorry, it's got a number of underpinning principles that are very, very strong, like words create worlds. So even in that introduction, we talked about, you know, maybe flipping it and not talking about improvement and change and talking about development. You know, the words matter. The words that we use matter. How we frame a question if we're asking for problems. You know, so this words create worlds is really important. But there's a number of other principles that are really crucial, and that's kind of what guides how you actually go about it. So, I mean, I won't go into all of these principles just now. You can read more about these, but they're really a crucial framing. So it's rather than there being a set process, it's about a way of being. Because I was listening to that podcast that you did about the becoming a pirate or being more pirate. And I was thinking, you know, there's a lots of similarities there in terms of this idea of it being a way of being rather than a strict methodology, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it appreciative inquiry, when you were asking me what is it and what it's not, one of my answers might have been it's everything. Just in the way that AI, appreciative inquiry, can be the methodology for a PhD or for a research project, for a quality improvement project. It can frame a conversation, an individual conversation. It can frame everything because it is this, it's a set of principles that, I mean, there is a methodology to guide a project, but overwhelmingly it's this these principles. And two kind of core concepts I wanted to bring in as well was this idea of generativity, which is central to appreciative inquiry, and that means seeing things with fresh eyes. And you know how people talk about, oh yeah, let's get together and think out the box. That's what you often used. But it's the how of all that. And I guess our work is always about trying to help people with the how of all these statements that we desire. So generativity is seeing things with fresh eyes, and this idea of playful provocation, whereby we are really open to surprises. And we try to develop things that create surprises. So I think these two things are maybe slightly different to other sort of improvement methodologies. And the idea that the whole thing starts with curiosity.
Yeah, absolutely.
That I just wanted to kind of mention these things that are often maybe not emphasized enough in the literature on it. Okay, the generativity, the playful provocation, the curiosity, and the fact that it gets weaved into everything. So in terms of you were asking me about, like, so say I was, starting off with people, getting people going with this. It is about kind of really starting quite small and helping them to really, really extend that curiosity muscle and get into a space where I think as Margaret Wheatley, she talks about treasuring curiosity rather than certainty. So some of the work we do in the beginning is getting people into that space through a number of exercises, all right? So the real focus on curiosity, which they're then often invited to go out to do what's called discovery work. Because in appreciative inquiry, the first step is discovery. Often we jump to create or let's do something about the problem or the issue, right? But this is about discovery, really finding out from those you know, from those you don't know, from those you never speak to, from those who have had the experience to tell us more about it. And that's the crucial bit that's done in quite a bit of depth with a variety of different resources. So for example, support worker was at one of the workshops we were doing, and we were encouraging them to use imagery and emotional words to explore with women. This is in a maternity unit, to explore with women kind of what mattered to them, but not to set up a big meeting, just to do it while they were in filling the jug of water or checking up on different observations or something. So to do it as part of their work. Okay. And she found out from a woman that the woman picked an image of like lots of cars crashing and colliding into each other. And the woman talked about feeling really scared and powerless when she was in labor and there was an emergency and everybody came running into her room, about 10 people came running into her room. And how frightened that was, and the whole world were watching her in quite a compromised position. And so the support worker listened to this and then was able to share that, a handover with the staff. And hear the staff's perspective on how we are in emergencies. And staff, of course, maybe were saying things like, oh, but we have to, it's important that we're all there and we do this, etc. Anyway, following discussion, so sorry, just to say it's important to hear staff perspective as well. So it's all relational.
Absolutely.
And out of that, they decided that they would try something new. And they would try something when emergency buzzers went. Everybody was aware of it, but only two people would go into the room, the rest would remain outside. And they did it that afternoon. They didn't have to have a project meeting to plan outcomes, all this kind of thing. They just did it. And then obviously can refine it. So this idea of finding out in the moment what matters, sharing that, hearing different perspectives, taking something forward that day, often. And so that would be an example of what, like a workshop that's really centering on curiosity and finding out using different resources to help people to say the unsayable, I guess, and then working together to try something out new. So that's just a short example, Jonathan. I don't know if that's
no, I mean, that's perfect, Belinda. And again, as you're kind of describing that, and you mentioned it before when you referenced in previous episode, that there's a common thread that's coming through some of these conversations that we're having with people when we're exploring different methodologies or tools, which is that, yeah, that there's methods and there's tools and they're helpful, but it's actually about shifting people's mindsets. You know, as you were discussing being, and I think that's a perfect example of it. It wasn't about necessarily asking that healthcare support worker to go and fill in a template or do some exercise in isolation, but it was actually thinking about changing their mindset to mean that they were having different type of interaction as they went about their kind of daily tasks. And then what they got was, you know, a real kind of learning experience that, as you described, they can take forward and ultimately change something. So yeah, that's something that's coming through more and more as I have these discussions with people, that it's actually about getting into that more generative, that more growth mindset space, and almost, you know, the tools or the approaches that you use are kind of secondary to that. I don't know if you would agree with that, but
I think that the inquiry tools that we developed are central, Jonathan. So the inquiry tools, in a piece of inquiry, the questions are fateful. So to enable us to get generativity, this idea of seeing things anew, the questions we ask are fateful. And so often people say to us, oh, but I'm not very good and I'm thinking about my questions. But the inquiry tools that we've developed, and there's many, many of them, are asking questions that have never been asked before, using different methods in order to tap into the unsayable, so that it generates surprise. It generates a different kind of dialogue. And, you know, it's just, so yeah, I would say the inquiry tools that for a piece of inquiry are crucial to actually moving forward with this. Because it's quite a conscious and deliberate act.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's, and I mean, in terms of, you know, that's a small, I use that example, Jonathan, deliberately, because I wanted to really emphasize that everybody can be doing this. Having said that, I think it takes a wee bit of courage to be putting some images out, or, you know, or showing people some images in a healthcare environment. You're going, what are we doing here? So you have to be a wee bit brave. But there's this element of surprise, and the idea that can be wrapped around everything. And I think when we chatted before, Jonathan, we talked about, you know, actually wrapping appreciative inquiry around a particular topic, such as how can appreciative inquiry be wrapped around something like incidents? You know, if incidents happen in the workplace.
Yeah, and that was a kind of powerful example you shared, and that's kind of stuck with me since, you know, we had the conversation before, where you kind of described the different kind of learning and understanding and kind of outputs you get from using appreciative inquiry to look at perhaps a patient safety incident or larger than maybe just a specific patient safety incident, versus using some of the more kind of go-to methodologies you would think that would be familiar to staff, like root cause analysis or different tools there. I wonder if you could say more about that.
Yeah, I mean, the other different approaches have their place, for sure, but I had experience, I was doing appreciative inquiry across a whole system, which means, you know, working with people at senior exec level, the clinical staff, the porters, domestic, all different people, okay? And one of the things that happened was I was asked to come in and support because there'd been an incident in a particular unit, and to use a piece of inquiry to work with that. And so how it was perhaps different was that we worked with in that unit about 40 staff. Often when an incident happens, not as many of that or people who aren't directly involved would be talked to. Often people use the word investigate. And you can imagine how that lands with people and the feelings it brings up. So again, the words create worlds is we talked about exploring, not investigating. And we went and spoke using a piece of inquiry. Again, we would read out the story about what happened. We'd ask people what stood out for them in that story, what are they curious about, how would they like things to be, and what one small thing would they do or ask or think about going forward. So there's a specific appreciative inquiry methodology called the LIFE process, which is learning and improving from everyday experience. So we did this with these 40 members of staff. People came. They, in the end, developed their own action plan. And one of the things that came out of our exploration and discovery work with them using creative methods was that they were able to say that they didn't know something and they were scared to ask. And this was to do with it was actually to do with COVID policy, which was perhaps resulted in this incident happening. And they were so uncertain, it was ever changing, and they didn't know who to ask. They weren't perhaps at handovers or reading the 28-page policy document about it. It was really difficult to know what was going on. So rather than perhaps a traditional action plan might say, training and reset policy or whatever, they wanted to become ask masters. They wanted to make it more culturally sound in their organ, in their department, to feel okay to ask when you didn't know. And so we created this whole process, and these posters was, how could we, at handover they would say, right, let's look at the Ask Masters poster. What would help you to be brave to say you don't know something today? So that was just one example of a different action point that came out, but they developed their actions and they were completely different to the action plans in our root cause analysis, which interestingly was done at the same time as this. Our approach took less time, and as I say, the outcomes were very, very different.
Yeah, I
So,
mean,
yeah.
that sounds fantastic to me, because I think what you're getting at there with the outcomes from the kind of AI approach is you're building on psychological safety, and you're kind of building that in, whereas something like, as you'd said, a root cause analysis would maybe say, communication was an issue. But you maybe it maybe be in the general terms, but the AI maybe allows you to kind of get into that specific. What exactly was it about that communication and being afraid to speak up and ask? And that's all about psychological safety within teams. So again, something we've covered in recent episodes in the podcast. So AI is maybe another tool to explore if you're having worries or would like to improve or continue your journey around the psychological safety. So Belinda, I mean, how would you say it could help people? If there was a if you had a kind of two or three sentences to say, how appreciative inquiry can help people, how would you describe it? What should folks take away from the conversation be?
Good question. What do you take away? I guess it, emphasizing that this is a way of being, and to start small with a new conversation. So to start small with a new conversation, because a piece of inquiry, the ripples that come from one conversation. You almost can practice it out from there to do that discovery work. Like I was saying about the support worker, asked one question or used, a different thing, and was able to then develop with others together a way forward. So it would be about the really and staying in the curiosity space much longer. We are so driven to get to the solution. And so it would be, it's a way of being, start small, start with one new conversation and try and stay in the curiosity space and to check in with all those who are the experts of that experience. So these would be kind of crucial things. I know it's, they sound a bit wishy-washy, Jonathan, but they're absolutely central to going forward, and it's a place to start.
No, I think, I mean, that makes sense to me, Belinda, and it would, of course, but I think as individuals and as teams that are maybe grappling with some of these challenges or opportunities and want to kind of make the best of them, I don't think we spend enough time in that space. Just as you said, I think we jump straight into the doing and working towards solutions without really understanding people's experience, without really understanding the kind of the breadth and depth of experience and having the conversations with folk and looking at everything that's out there, so that when you do jump into the doing and you do start working to some kind of solution, you're more certain that than you perhaps were about that being the right tract. My experience, I think a number of change initiatives, whether they're at a kind of macro level or micro level, tend to fail because we kind of get along and think, oh, this maybe isn't the right thing that we thought we needed to do, and it just kind of peters out. And that's often because they never spent that time, which is often viewed as a luxury in health and social care, is to have that thinking time and to have that time just to be curious and have the conversations and fully understand problems and experiences to then move forward with your best foot. So yeah, that absolutely makes sense to me.
And I think it's interesting. I think maybe another thing is when I'm saying try and stay in the curiosity space a bit longer, Jonathan, and really emphasize that rather than certainty, because probably nothing is certain in
Well,
this world going forward. Everything is ever changing.
yeah, as
So,
certain as you can be, I suppose,
you're always going to be reshaping, refining all the time. And seeing that as potentially exciting rather than never ending. It's about the language we use to describe that, I suppose.
And this conversation's done exactly that with me because it's made me even more curious about appreciative inquiry and different approaches and the different things that it could unlock. And see, it's definitely something that I feel like I know less than when I started, but I feel that that is a good thing because it's now put me in that real curious space where it's like, okay, this is something that I want to do, but I feel like now I have to go away and learn more and explore more opportunities and be in that curious space around this. So listen, thanks, Belinda. And as we kind of wind down here, is there a place people can go to find more information or resources about appreciative inquiry and some of the work you'd mentioned, the kind of was it the Care Compassion work? I know you did that through
Yeah.
the University of West of Scotland. So where could folk go to find out more?
So, I mean, the Care Compassion work was actually at Edinburgh Napier, Jonathan.
Oh, sorry, Napier.
No, it's okay. But in my time at the University of Scotland, we developed, a whole range of resources that we use to help us become curious, right? And to really promote that, seeing things with fresh eyes. So, I can send you the link to the University of West of Scotland website. It's the My Home Life Scotland website, which has got a number of resources, little films you can look at to see different resources being used in action in the context of conversations. So that would, and then obviously people, if they wanted to contact me, I'm pretty good at getting back to people and on emails and things. So I can leave my email address as well if people were interested in learning a bit more.
Absolutely, and we'll put all of the links and the emails and all of the contact details in the show notes, so folk who are interested in learning more can click through the show notes. So, Belinda, all that's left for me to say is thank you for taking the time to have a conversation with me today. I've really appreciated it and learned a lot. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Jonathan. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you again to Belinda for taking the time to have a conversation with us today, and that kind of statement, that status update that I gave at the end of the conversation, where I feel like I know less about appreciative inquiry than I thought I did get into the conversation, is absolutely true. It's true, a lot of the conversations I have in this podcast, to be perfectly honest, you think you've got an idea about what you're going to talk about based on your research, and then it comes to life and becomes something completely different when you actually speak to the person that really knows what they're talking about. And Belinda really knows what she's talking about, hugely, hugely experienced. So it's certainly inspired me and given me ideas about going away and looking deeper into the possibilities when it comes to AI and how I can use that in the work that I lead. Hopefully, it's done the same for you. All the links, as always, are in the show notes. So please do click a name, and as Belinda and I were saying in the conversation, it's good to be curious, so please continue to be curious. So all that's left for me to say once again is thank you for listening. This is going to be the last episode for a wee while. We may come back with some new episodes later in the year. So if you haven't, go back and listen to previous episodes in this season, some fantastic conversations in this second batch of interviews, but also go back and discover and rediscover some of the conversations that I had in the first season with some amazing folks. So in total we've got about 20 episodes there that you can go back and listen to, signpost people to. You can use them as learning pieces as part of your capacity and capability building activity. So just a final, make sure you subscribe to the podcast and you won't miss us when we come back later in the year. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at the QI underscore guy, and we will see you later. And until then, take care.